Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
That's right, you're listening to Money FM 89.3. Time now for Market View, where we take a look at how the Singapore stock market is likely to close for the day, the biggest movers, sectors and companies to watch. But as usual, a quick recap of how we started. Well, Singapore shares rose at the open this morning following mixed results in global markets. In early trade, the Straits Times Index was up 0.6% to 3,197 points after some 49 million securities changed hands in the broader market. The closing numbers are still firming up, but here's what I have on the screen right now. The Straits Times Index currently up 1.2% at 3,215 points. In terms of value turnover, we are looking at 1.46 billion Sing dollars. Gainers outnumbered losers, 390 versus 202. Top five movers by value, we've got here DBS, OCBC, UOB, Singtel and Keppel Corp. Heavily traded securities included Seatrium, Thai Beverage and Marco Polo Marine. In terms of companies to watch, we do have Olam Group. Why so? Olam Agri has launched a non-binding indicative offer to acquire all shares in this Australian cotton ginning company called Nemoy Cotton for some 122 million Aussie dollars, which is around 107 million Sing dollars. Now, elsewhere, from the US Fed sticking to its earlier projection of 3 interest rate cuts this year, and comments by Fed Chair Jerome Powell on whether a strong labour market could derail plans to cut rates, we've got more international headlines in focus. Not to mention fashionistas suing luxury brand Hermes for not selling them Birkin bags without buying accessories. Now, lots of market moves and views, and joining me on the line is Terence Wong, CEO of Azure Capital. Terence, welcome.
Hello, Tian Tian.
Hey, great to have you on board. And Terence, let's start with the US Fed this time round. They kept interest rates steady, stuck with the earlier projection of 3 rate cuts this year. But perhaps what is more exciting is that dovish tone by Jerome Powell. Among other things, he said that the continued labour market strength wouldn't be a reason for the Fed to hold off cutting rates, and that higher inflation data hasn't changed the whole story of inflation moving down. Now, it seems like his words are mightier than the dot plot. Your thoughts?
Well, Tian Tian, first time in 2 years, he has started not
to say something,
SGX.
Right?
Yes. I was too frantically looking for my SGX prices. But anyway, the dot plot, right, it comes out once a quarter.
Yeah.
It's a temporary roadmap of what the Fed is looking at in terms of future interest rate moves. As the most recent dot plot we saw during the last FOMC meeting in December, Fed was looking to make cuts to interest rates for the first time since 4 years ago. And they got the market expected, very, very excited. And they started to price in 6 cuts in 2024.
Yeah.
But as the year, as the months went by in January, February, that started to peter out. Then now we're expecting 3. And it looks like there's a possibility of that happening. And if you ask me whether, you know, power words are more powerful than the plot, yes and maybe no. You know, yes, in the sense that as the leader of the Fed, you know, so his weight definitely carries, his words definitely carry more weight. Hence, the market will tend to listen very closely to what Power has to say and then cross-check against some of the individual Fed members, because it's not always a consensus. Then if more and more are jumping on his bandwagon, then they will, you know, adjust accordingly. Don't forget what I just mentioned, right? Dot plot only releases once a quarter.
Yeah.
And maybe outdated with release of new economic data.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised, because in previous rounds, the Fed always say, or Jerome Powell always said, it's going to be data-driven. And this time around, he says that even though we saw some strong inflation data in the early months, it doesn't derail the whole bigger picture. Your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I do also have that same view, because he has been talking about data all this while. Our interpretation is that, you know, Power, you know, and a narrow majority of the committee feel strongly about not delaying cuts for too long. And they are probably targeting the June FOMC meeting for the first cut. So with this in mind, it's not hard to see why, you know, today the Asian markets have rallied. STI has also followed suit. I think it's gone up by 1.5%.
Right. And since you mentioned about the STI, right, how did the STI fare today? Any surprises when it comes to biggest movers? I believe Marco Polo Marine was one of the hot stocks.
Yeah, Marco Polo Marine, thanks to initiation by Maybank, that really like set the excite, really made it a lot more exciting than any time in the recent past. And it's valid. You know, we've spoken about Marco Polo on this program before.
Yeah.
It's right. It's basically firing on practically all cylinders. So that's going to be some exciting developments over in Marco Polo. Other big movers will be the banks, which is unsurprising.
Yeah.
DBS, OCBC, UOB up between 1% and 2%. And that's because, you know, when there's a rising tide with the markets, the banks tend to be the bellwethers.
Right. Now, aside from the banks and Marco Polo Marine, we do have Olam Group. Its indirect 64% or so owned a subsidiary, Olam Agri, has launched this non-binding indicative offer to acquire all shares in Australian cotton ginning company, I believe it's called Nemoy Cotton, for about 122 million Aussie dollars. How significant is this for Olam Group where share price is concerned then?
Well, the share price was up 3% today, but I really don't think that this Nemoy deal was the catalyst. Olam's market cap, $3.9 billion. And for Nemoy Cotton, we're talking about 107, like you mentioned. I haven't done the 122 Aussie dollar, but you said 107, right? So
yeah,
107 divided by $3.92 billion,
3%. Not very big, right?
Yeah. Right. 3%, mere 3%. So it's not exactly large, and I don't think it will move the needle. In fact, I think this has more to do with the wider market rally than the feel-good factor, as well as the feel-good factor following the release of its, sort of solid results in the second half of this year, right? They went up by 15% in the second half. There's also the share buyback program that were actually buoyed sentiments. So a few good things, but I doubt that this acquisition, Nemoy Cotton, has very much to do with it.
Right. If you're just tuning in, we're now in conversation with Terence Wong, CEO of Azure Capital. Now, from Olam Group, Terence, let's go to No Sign Board. The restaurant operator's controlling shareholder, Gu Gong, and executive chairman Lim Yong Sim, they've agreed to sell all their shares for $500,000 Sing dollars to three investors. And these are three investors with business interests in China. And their collective ownership currently constitutes 55% of No Sign Board's total shares. How should we be reading into this, given that No Sign Board just resumed trading days ago?
Well, the thing about No Sign Board, there's really not very much news out there. We saw a slump, you know, when there was a resumption in trade. This is not unexpected, right? After 2 years, the last time there was news, that's when Q&M Sports and Chin Xia wanted to make an offer for it. But that fell through. And now, 2 years later, with three unconnected investors coming in to snap out the 55% stake, I think they are trying to... I haven't seen very much, you know, regarding the plans of the company, and I think that in the next few weeks to few months, that should actually like shed more color. I think the investors or the company will actually like release more information regarding the transformation of the business.
Right. And across the region, Terence, a second U.S. senator has attacked Microsoft's operations in China, adding to a wave of criticism from human rights groups. And that's following a Bloomberg Business Week investigation about the way Microsoft censors its Bing search engine in China. How far is this a cause for concern for investors?
I don't think that's very much. I'll tell you what. No, right. Microsoft Bing is the most popular search engine in China. I was surprised. I really didn't
second
think
second most popular.
So big. Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. I probably need to search a little bit harder. But from what I found out, it's the second most popular. Even if it's not, right? It is kind of popular, and it remains the only Western search engine accessible over in China. You try Google, it's Google was out many years ago. Right. It is really known. I mean, if you are in China, you probably will have to toe the line. There will be some form of compromise on issues, not only in terms of politics. Right. So this is really nothing new. And you know, they cannot control what the China government wants. But I'm quite sure that Microsoft would want to continue operating in China. And given how these negotiations work, it will probably take a very long time before any confirmed decisions are being made over in the Congress. But financially, well, I am looking at the 2022 numbers. I think that the China market don't account for a lot when it comes to Microsoft. When it comes to Microsoft Bing, I think it contributes less than 2%. So even if they would lose it, it will not be the end of the world for Microsoft and the stock. Well, what, $3 trillion, right?
Yeah. Again, what, it's the very big base, right, for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Okay, and before we go, you're going to like this one, Terence. I promise it's going to be very fun because fashionistas, they're desperate to get their hands on Birkin handbags and they're suing Hermes in California on the grounds that the company wouldn't sell them a Birkin bag unless they buy other luxury products first. It's a bit like going to the restaurant and having to buy all the side dishes before you can buy the main course, right? I believe the plaintiffs allege that this practice runs foul of antitrust laws because it inflates the effective cost of a product. Your thoughts on the matter? Is it just a way of business and are we looking at just a handful of unhappy customers?
You know how MS started?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a harness workshop dedicated to serving European noblemen in the 1800s. So Birkin bags, right? They are handmade in France. They are using they use the same type of signature saddle stitching that they did back in the 1800s. So every bag is supposed to be hand sewn. And so what? This is what the marketing guru, the marketing machine, starts to tell you, right? Each bag is hand sewn by a single artisan, takes up to 18 hours to make. And demand has really exploded for MS, particularly the Birkins and the Kellys, over the past decade. Particularly during the COVID period, right? Because people cannot go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So they have to spend, and they spend on these luxury products, or those that can. So, but different stores, MS stores have different strategies. Over in Paris, for example, you know, it goes on a daily lottery system. So on a given day, there could be a 30,000 people queuing up, and then you like strike 4D. If you were to be one of the few people that are allowed to go in the store to buy the coveted bag. So you don't need to buy any peripheral items. But in Singapore and the US, you actually need to spend on the peripherals. Typically the same amount as the bag. So a bag, you know, starting price may be $13,000-$15,000. So you need to spend that much before you get the right to buy a bag. Sort of like a COE system. So the spending test is the COE. It gives you the right. But it's not an obligation. You don't have to buy the bag. But most people, of course, they're gunning and aiming for the bag, right? So to me, I think it's all about demand and supply.
Yeah.
If supply is so tight, it just has to go to the highest bidder. And because it's a luxury item, right? If it's priced above, then don't buy. I mean, that's the thing. No point being sour about it. And because there's only that limited supply out there. And the only reason why I think it's so covered, not because the design is nice, right? It's because of its scarcity value. So the way it's priced all has to go to, and the number of bags out there all goes towards this scarcity value. So it's tough to say whether they're, I think it's very, very difficult to prove, in fact, antitrust violations, because that typically requires substantial evidence of anti-competitive behavior, collusion, market manipulation, etc., etc. So it's difficult to prove. And I really don't think that they run afoul of any of these antitrust laws.
Right. I wonder if your wife is queuing for one as well. Okay, I shan't put you in trouble. Thanks a lot, Terence, as always. That was Terence Wong, CEO at Azure Capital. Thank you very much for joining us on Money FM 89.3.
Thanks, Tian.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.